How do you write women so well?
I think of a man, and I take away reason and accountability.
Hey folks, just a quick reminder that the 2022 Thinking Texas Football preview is out there. That's right, the Burnt Orange Bible is ready and waiting for you. That is, of course, if you're only interested in reading the best damn Texas football preview that money can buy. And it's also the best Big 12 preview. It's also the best Texas opponent preview. There's also awesome recruiting information and articles provided by Eric Nalin. There's tremendous photography by Will Gallagher of Will Gallagher Studios. Hey, jump in. If you're a Longhorn fanatic, there's no reason why you shouldn't have this preview. In my opinion, it's the best thing that you can buy. It's funny. It's amusing. It's analytical. I pour my heart out into it, and I appreciate all of you who are supporting it. And of course, all the folks who are nice enough to leave reviews. Currently, there's about 70 reviews on the different places you can buy it, all of them 5-star. So don't just take my word for it. Take theirs. Go buy the Burnt Orange Bible today. Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast featuring powerful Joe Cook. Joe, this is going to be an accountability session. This is long overdue. Uh-oh. It's you know, you're a guy who just doesn't hold people accountable. And it's time that everyone gets held accountable, not just the coaches, everyone. You're going to hold me accountable. You're going to hold yourself accountable. I'm looking at Joe Cook's bedroom. It's a disgrace. It's not clean. He hasn't held himself accountable in terms of basic domestic duties. Joe, how would you like to start this accountability session? Should we cover the amazing memes from the live press conference?
I was going to say the decoration I do have up is a framed picture of Jeff Bagwell, a signed picture of Mac Brown, and then a Nolan Ryan throwing his fifth no-hitter. So I got the essentials.
That's amazing.
In my room.
Hey, I know that this is not like a no-shit statistic to baseball fans and Astro fans, but I'd never realized Nolan Ryan never won a Cy Young, and he has, what, 5 no-hitters, 7 no-hitters? How many?
Yeah, 7. I didn't know that about the Cy Young part, but, you know, one of the all-time leader in strikeouts, I still think. And it's weird. The 1 year he could have, or one of his better years, I think he could have won the Cy Young in Houston. A teammate won it, and Mike Scott, I believe, in 1986. And threw a no-hitter on the last day of the season. But I'm going to hold you accountable. This is a football podcast, even though you're baseball. Yep. Sorry, your newfound love of the Colorado Rockies is not rewarding you right now, but
no.
We got football to talk about. So I'll go into that accountability meme. Where it originated from, about, you know, hey, hold the coaches accountable, was there was somebody on the Inside Texas message boards, and it was during, I think, the 2019 season, and for all intents and purposes, they wanted me to be their lightning rod for their frustration towards Tom Herman and Todd Orlando.
Yes.
They wanted me to be the person going up and, you know, standing up and making a scene and saying, you know, basically going up and be like, why do you suck? And
they wanted you to be Jim Acosta during the Trump administration, any White House press conference briefing, right?
Right. They wanted their emotions to be parlayed through me. And it's just like, you know, I get it, because, hey, I was watching that 2019 season as well. And, you know, 0 blitzes on 3rd and 17 and, you know, all the different stuff that I think that, you know, that TCU game where they're wearing the ugliest uniforms of all time. And that was a loss to a Matt Rhule team. You know, I understand the frustration, but if I just go in there guns blazing, then at that point, Tom Herman's going to look at me like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm not doing this. And if I, you know, what happened was the people who seriously, put that meme out there, were overtaken by several of our, known associates who took it over and use it at every opportunity they can get, whether it be Longhorn football or, you know, if Eddie Reese got second place, they'd probably be chomping down on me saying like, hey, you know, what has Eddie lost his fastball? Or so it's become pretty funny. Last year, it came back in a big way with Pete Kwiatkowski, and the thing, and unfortunately, Steve Sarkisian has the similar philosophy as his previous boss and Nick Saban, and to be the only one talking from the program, except on very rare occasions.
Yeah.
So you know, they wanted me to yell at Steve Sarkisian about, you know, do you know your defense is bad? To, you know, sometimes I wish I would have done that, and for him to just be like, "Wait, what? Like, we shouldn't have given up 57 points to Kent. Hold on, are you watching the same game I'm watching?" Like, that's another thing about that. Like, what's obvious to us is obvious to them as well. Now they just have to disseminate the message differently. But at this point in the preseason, they're able to disseminate a pretty optimistic message, and that's what we've heard over the past few days, even from Pete Kwiatkowski, from Kyle Flood, Jeff Banks, and Steve Sarkisian himself.
Well, the good news about the Joe Cook accountability meme is I think it used to actually irritate you at first because it was so stupid and sort of unrealistic about what your job was and what's professional demeanor in a press conference. But it turned quickly because everyone realized how stupid it was. And then the satire, I think you now enjoy it. And I got to say, the recent spate of Joe Cook accountability memes that took place for the Steve Sarkisian live press conference coverage, UT was, I got to give a big hat tip to that guy. So he begins with the classic dude walking with the plain girlfriend and his head's turned looking at the smoking chick in the red dress. And of course, the plain girl is labeled accountability. The guy is Joe Cook, and the girl in the red dress says literally anything else.
They're good. I like the "Do snakes have butts?" one.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Just setting the scene.
It's the couple. They're sleeping back to back, and the woman's like, "I bet he's thinking of someone else," and he's like, "Do snakes have butts?"
That was good.
The good part about that is, Joe Cook has wondered before if snakes.
Yeah,
there's no doubt. It,
I mean, it's you know, cursed to the ground. You know, does that mean they're also cursed without a, you know, we'll get into that at a certain point. But was he and I had an inauspicious start because if I'm going to get emotional online about something, it's going to be about Astros baseball, and he was very good to poke and prod at that. But he and I have gotten pretty good, and I met him in person, and those memes, he gets it too, kind of like, yes, you're saying, like, he understands it's the meme as well. So if you're listening, we'll tear up, we'll go to Katy Trail again and do some shenanigans after, like last time.
He's good at memeing, and he's very good at terrorizing Casey Thompson supporters. We learned that here.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's got a Magnum PI photo as his avatar. How can you dislike that?
Right.
All right. So you've had the good fortune of actually experiencing some actual football. So do we want to talk about your brief observations at the live practice, or do we want to talk about your general feel and impressions at the press conferences? Your choice.
Let's go press conferences, because what they say leads into, you know, what I was looking for or what I was trying to think of seeing. So we can go there. And again, because we got all the coordinators, which we're probably not going to get this year unless they go to a bowl. And that's the bowl's discretion, not Texas's discretion. Yeah,
you're not seeing those guys again for a while. Some commentary again on you. You were the punching bag a little bit. How do you go about choosing which pair of khakis that you wear to the press conference? And how do you choose the polo shirt?
Those aren't even khakis. They're Kanglers. They're khaki jeans.
What's so, I've never heard of that.
So they're Wrangler brand, just khaki jeans. They're not blue. They're tan. So they're pretty much daily wear for me. And whatever inside Texas polo I have that Eric gave to me a few years ago, whichever one's clean, I usually grab that one out of the closet. So
do you not lay
sponsored
it out?
By polo.
Do you lay it out the night before?
No, I don't. I sleep in it. So get ready for, you know, you're not going to be late if you're wearing your uniform.
Right. So. Did you ever do that as a kid? Did you ever sleep in your clothes because you were super excited about something the next day?
No, I don't think I did that because it would just be right there. I'd throw them on.
I so did.
I never went that overboard. But it was no. I mean, I'm pretty consistent in what I show up wearing to those press conferences, and I'm pretty consistent in my seat. But again, not sponsored by Polo or anything like that.
So two thoughts on that. One, I have done that a couple of times when I was a kid. I remember I was going to a camp, which was an awesome camp. Talk about growing up in a different time, Gen X. It was called Myers Mountain Men. And it was a bunch of 12-year-old boys, 12 and 13-year-old boys, on a reconfigured bus. And you would just ride around with these couple of camp counselors and this old guy named Bob Myers, an awesome dude. And he taught you like bushcraft. And you went camping all through New Mexico and Colorado. And you went to grocery stores, you shop for yourself, you do like cookouts. We'd all go trout fishing. He taught us how to dress up the trout, cook our own meals. At night, wow, They'd clear out everything and we'd have giant wrestling matches, tear off kids and have them fight. And then we'd do, you know, huge amounts of pranks. You know, you had to bring an army cot to sleep on to be off the ground. And we carried one kid's army cot into the middle of a stream and just set him down in the middle of the night if he woke up. I mean, and then we would go pick gourds. Do you know what gourds are?
Yeah, like kind of in between squashes and pumpkins or something like that.
We'd pick a bunch of gourds, and then we'd all, in the bus, some of the buses reconfigured, and it had like a sky hatch that you could access. And as we were riding, we would throw gourds at signs. And Bob would give you points. And you had to, you know, count points. You got cash prizes for hitting a sign. It was complete. It was borderline Lord of the Flies. It was awesome. I grew up in the best possible time. And then secondly, so I slept in my clothes the night before I was leaving on Myers Mountain Men. So, and then the second thing you brought up was having your seat. What would you do if you showed up and Brian Davis, what if his ass was sitting in your seat? Would you strike him, punch him?
I'd move over. It's not that big of a deal.
No, Joe, that's a power move. Why would you let traditional media do that to you? Why are you letting yourself be oppressed?
I feel like our what we do on our non-traditional outlet is speaks for itself compared to what the not to say anything ill of them, but I'm just proud of what we're able to do. And I think we've lapped the traditional and non-traditional field, even over these past couple of days.
Well, you're right. Joe always choosing the responsible course, but I know you're a believer and Jesus said, turn the other cheek. He also threw the moneylenders out of the temple. He also advised one of his apostles to what? Sell his cloak and buy a sword. Remember that?
Yeah.
All right. I'm just trying to help.
It's a balance. It's a balance. For
okay.
Sure.
There's a yin yang to the Bible.
Right, exactly.
Nothing like bringing in Eastern Orientalism into Bible discussions.
Texas winning the Director's Cup for the second year in a row proves the commitment of the athletic program and the university to excellence, to eliteness, to being the very best that they can be. That brings to mind Gabe Winslow and his amazing team, because Gabe has been there among the elite from the very beginning, and he's not going anywhere. You need to reach out to him at 832-557-1095, or you could simply go to mortgagesbygabe.com. Here's the down low. In the mortgage industry, there is tremendous value to dealing with people who are extremely bright, who understand the industry, and they're not just order processing. And two, it's very useful to work with someone who's very ethical, who's not going to leave you high and dry when you're trying to buy your dream house. That's Gabe Winslow. That's why you need to dial these digits. 832-557-1095. He's located in the greater Houston area, but he serves our listeners everywhere in the great state of Texas. And we're going to be adding some other states as well down the road. So keep your ears out for that one. Call Gabe. He's the best of the best. You're not going to regret it. If he's not your first call, you better make damn sure he's your last call. Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning, and right now he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call.
All right. All right, Joe Cook, are you ready to talk press conference? Give me the vibe.
Let's do it.
Give me the vibe on Sark. Look, I've said this before. I like Sark personally. I like the dude. He does a great job representing Texas, and I don't mean in like a smarmy, over-the-top, fake way, not thinking of anyone in particular, but there's a sincerity to him. He does a great job of just representing UT, right? At the same time, you can see little snippets of his true personality come out, such as when he told one of your media colleagues, "That's a terrible question. Let me explain
it." Right.
And you know what? Right. He did a great job explaining why. And actually, it was the correct answer. I believe the question is about, you know, do you have to have Kelvin Banks start at left tackle if you're going to have a decent year? And Sark was like, I reject that terrible question's premise on multiple grounds. And then he explained why. So I like Sark personally. That's my bias. I obviously want him to succeed. What's your vibe of both interacting with him in the formal press conference, but then also the informal, you know, private debriefings and things like that? What's your sense of him?
He's aware of himself. And that includes not pomposity, but confidence. You know, he's aware that he's good at play calling and he's at a pretty high level position, but he's also aware that he didn't do as well as he needed to last year. But after, you know, basically from the moment that the Texas defense held Kansas State out of the end zone to yesterday or the day before, he's had a great run. So he's going to, you know, capitalize on that. I guess Eric kind of put this in an article. The only downside of this whole offseason really was not getting O'Shawn Mathis. Like that's basically, and you know, recruiting misses on the trail as recruiting misses on the trail go. But you know, this guy rode into rode out of a 5-7 season into his second season, riding as high as he could. And you could definitely tell that, at the same time, you know, he understands that not everything wasn't perfect on offense. Everything wasn't perfect on defense. But he explained ways he tried to fix it. Exactly. So my impression of Sark has always been, if you're honest with him, if you don't have, you know, just deceitful motives or anything like that when asking a question, you know, he's going to play straight up. And I think, you know, there's a picture from the Zoom era of Sark where somebody asked him a question. He has this like really weird look on his face, like, like, I don't know about that. And I think that that's kind of the way he operates. But, you know, you can really tell that he's excited to, you know, coach quarterbacks. The battle is going to be difficult. It's going to be different than last year's. But that's his bread and butter. That's what he played. That's what he rose through the ranks as before he became a, you know, very well-known play caller. And, you know, he enjoys the quarterback battle, quarterback competition, quarterback development aspect of his job. But it's also interesting to see some of the ways that he develops himself. He changed up special teams coaching. That's something I'll be writing on Inside Texas. Like used to, it'd be like, all right, here's the punt unit. One punt unit, go. Two punt unit, go. Okay, one kickoff unit, go. Two. And now he's basically platooning these guys to get a bunch of different guys' looks, probably keep guys' legs fresh. And you know, various different things. So he's not afraid to, you know, he believes in his system, but he's not afraid to give it some alterations if need be. And I think he's also very sure of himself. We saw, in years past where the head coach wasn't sure of himself in various ways. And I'm not enough of an amateur psychologist to, you know, see, you know, what, maybe where Charlie Strong wasn't sure of himself or where Tom Herman wasn't sure of himself in certain areas. But, you know, and this is something we talked about a lot over the course of last preseason and this preseason, like based off what Sark's gone through, he has got more reason to be sure of himself than anybody probably who's coached at Texas before. And that's not just because of the off field stuff. That's because of all the success he's had on the field too. We often label coaches as stubborn, but I don't see Sark as that. I think it's more just being sure of himself, but also nimble as he needs to be. All that said, though, he knows the defense has to get better. And that was a good thing about talking with Pete Kwiatkowski. He knows it has to get better. I mean, he even cracked it was a very well-timed joke that he cracked at himself about the pass rush last year. And he basically said, what pass rush? He knows it wasn't there. And that goes back to my point. These guys know, they see what we see. They feel the pain we feel. They understand the problems that we're, you know, writing about and observing. But at the same time, it sounds like from Sark's perspective and from all those guys' perspective, there's a confidence about this year, not only in on-field talent, but off-field, just overall team culture that has them feeling pretty dang good entering what's going to be day two today.
This team just feels different.
It feels different. I'm waiting on – so that you're hitting all the training camp platitudes, you know, considering your base Paul, I'm surprised you didn't go with he's in the best shape of his life. That's always a classic spring training trope. You know, he by the time October came around last year, he was 25 pounds overweight, eating Big Macs every day. And now he's having protein smoothies and is cut and he's in the best shape of his life. And, we haven't gotten to that quite yet, mostly because we haven't gotten to the players, but hey, I saw Chris Brouts. It felt different out there. And, it seems as if everything is, going a lot better. And, you know, even with the training camp platitudes, some of them are holding true. It feels like
the routes were as crisp as the pleats in your khaki jeans.
That's not a good thing.
No, it's not. Hey, I'm glad you mentioned the offense because one of the things that I always find, and we all do this, but one thing that me writing my big preview always challenges is I have to re-examine the season as it actually happened. And what I realize is my memory of how the season happened is always incorrect. Meaning you have these dominant themes that fixate in your mind. And they actually, a lot of them don't hold up when you go back and actually rewatch. And what's weird is I'll go back and read some of my postmortems and they were all correct and accurate. It's just, and I'm the guy who wrote them and I'll find things and I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that. And I'm like, freaking, you wrote this, guy. How did you not realize that?
And so what was the big thing that you like that popped up for me? Because there was one that popped up for me and I'm wondering if it's the same for you.
What's that?
Sark mentioned it the other day. They had leads in the second half, five of those seven losses.
Absolutely. 100%. Here's another one. Kansas. So I bet the average popular thought about the Kansas game, which Texas lost in humiliating fashion, is, man, the defense got destroyed. You lost a game and played in the 50s. The defense was horrific in that game, no question. They couldn't stop the Kansas running game. They couldn't stop the freshman Devin Neal. Freaking Jalen Daniels put on like a little efficiency passing clinic throwing the ball. That said, the Texas offense put a bunch of points and yards up. It was horrific. Four turnovers, by the way, right. One pick six and multiple screw ups. Like when they had the opportunity to put the game away. Yes. Even though Kansas was scoring, there were opportunities to put the game away. I had to go back and relive some of those games. Now I was at the Oklahoma State game. I didn't have to relive that, but that was a game that Texas was really controlling. And the defense certainly laid an egg in the fourth quarter. Oklahoma State ran the ball right up their ass, but the Texas offense just ran out of ideas in about the middle of the third quarter. And they just stopped scoring. and stop moving the football. And it was just OSU catching up, you know? So anyway, my point is I'm glad you mentioned that Sark understands the offense needs to get better too, because if you look at it from a process standpoint, the thing that I got most excited about with regards to Texas last year is the number of times in a game where Sark made a play call that if you execute it, it's a 70-yard touchdown. And Texas was basically flipping a coin on whether they could hit those gimme balls, whether it was Casey Thompson or Hudson Card. And it makes me realize that there's a lot of meat left on the bone of this offense, even with an inferior group of skill players from last year. When you look at the skill players this year and compare it to last year, it's a different football team. It's not even the same group of guys. So I think, you know, Texas becoming a top 10 offense potentially, that, you know, people say, whoa, you can't just win. You got to win with defense. Not really. I mean, if you watch the Big 12 traditionally, not last year, obviously that was a defensive battle between Baylor and Oklahoma State ultimately, but traditionally Lincoln Riley won several Big 12 titles off of offense before the defense got competitive. And so it's perfectly realistic that Texas could be kind of disappointing on defense and still play in the Big 12 title game. Am I doing that?
No, I think, you know, the people who emphasize complementary football want to have a certain high floor, but they understand that emphasizing complementary football, unless you have just top two recruiting classes every year, you know, you have to have that high floor. But if you have an overpowering side of the ball, especially the one that scores points, you can make up for it.
Yeah.
You really can. And yeah, Lincoln Riley did that. He didn't think that would, apparently didn't think that would play out in the Oklahoma's future conference. So left for another one, but that'll probably play out in the Big Ten, against most of the teams he's playing against. So yeah, it's, you know, we always kind of joke if this could be a true Big 12 team, in that it's, they just need to outscore the opponent. They can probably do that, but and they've got the right schedule, I think, in the non-conference to really test that out. Because on the average, it's, you know, pretty good schedule. But when you add probably the best team in the country this year, you're going to be facing some very difficult challenges. So, but yeah, I mean, this could be a team that is just, as long as the offense is really good, it can overcome even just an average to below average defense. And, you know, that I think that could help Texas win the games it needs to in year two.
Did you get any sense from Kwiatkowski that he wants to do things differently? I mean, I looked at the transcript and I think he was honest, but he also sort of wasn't shy about saying, like, hey, I don't think I had some of the material necessary to realize my vision of what I want to do. But he also said, hey, it's also my job to coach him up. And it's my job to do the best I can. What was your vibe like being there? Because sometimes the transcript doesn't communicate it.
I think that's pretty fair. You know, these coaches are stubborn. But it seems like these are a little bit more nimble. There's one thing that he mentioned that really stood out is that he said, you know, I think the strength of this defense is going to be the interior defensive line. So he knows that maybe the defensive ends aren't what they need to be. Well, right. if you've got interior defensive linemen, you can modify your scheme enough to emphasize that. Now, we didn't see that yesterday in a 20-minute viewing session in the first day of practice where they were running a single pursuit drill. Like, it still looked like the good old 2-4-5, but there's a lot of time left. And I got the sense that Kwiatkowski knows that there's going to be a need to use the good players on his team instead of the maybe average-ish players who fit better but aren't as good as the good players. You know, if you're running a line of I guess at this point, it'd probably be, if you wanted to emphasize those three defensive linemen, interior defensive linemen, Ojimbo, Coburn, Murphy, I kind of like that better than maybe an unproven Baron Sorrell out there. Now, I mean, Ojemo and Coburn have to prove a lot themselves this year. But if they're running stuff that helps emphasize that that aspect of the team, then it sounds like that's showing some ability to adjust even while trying to run the scheme that he's been so successful with over the past 10 years or so.
All right, that's a seamless transition to a premature depth chart freakout from the limited session that you saw. They're, by the way, they're not even in pads yet, folks. Like, they're in the shells, right? But they're not hitting. They're not really doing anything, right? Mm-hmm. They did come out running the true 2-4-5, right? I mean, at least the quote unquote first team is Sorrell and Ogofu on the edges, and then Coburn and what, Ojemo?
Correct.
Okay. So I think the first reaction that people saw when they saw that is like, oh no, like he hasn't learned anything. What's going on? And you know, and I have to admit, I was like, I could make my second team line is going to be better than your first. If you give me Ian Sweat and Collins, Collins was like what on the fifth string or something.
Running threes, yeah.
Yeah. You give me Murphy, Sweat, and Collins, that's a better group than the starters, or at least the people who came on first. Let's not call that the starters.
Right.
Is he just screwing around, like showing his base? Or is he already establishing a hierarchy? Is it how soon can we freak out about depth charts, Joe?
I'd wait till next week, because even Steve Sarkisian himself goes like, you know what, guys probably aren't going to be making moves when they don't even have pads on. And in reference to other position battles throughout the course of the summer, he said, I owe these guys the opportunity to put the pads on for them to, you know, prove something.
Yep.
And the thing about Ojemo and Coburn is that they're fifth year seniors, and they are, aside from one press conference, they are great soldiers. They are guys who have basically bought into two different coaching staffs, done everything asked, and play good football. Good, but if not inconsistent. So to think that they're going to be unseated in practice one, I don't buy that. Now, of course, it could play out. And we also know Coburn's limitations, Ojomo's limitations. Like, that's something we're aware of. But as far as, you know, culture, depth chart, it makes sense that your two senior leaders, fifth year seniors, right? 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Yeah, fifth year seniors are going to be leading the way at the two spots. Sweat's a senior too. So that also follows a little bit. And Murphy, like you mentioned, everybody thinks that he should be probably in either a Jomo or Coburn spot. So somebody's got to be an odd man out there. And it looks to be Collins and some of the other either freshmen or, you know, guys who are kind of just filling out the bottom of the depth chart at this point. I feel like if we saw a true three down look or three interior defensive linemen look, then Collins would be on the second team and nobody would be freaking out, you know? So, and it's like, oh, he's the second team behind the experienced guys and the very talented sophomore, you know, or the three senior. Like, it's the fact that he's the third team in a base look of a defense that we're not totally quite sure yet how much they're going to be running throughout the course of this season. So now, that's not to say that, hey, if you're Alfred Collins, you're the only prospect ever to come from Bastrop Cedar Creek High School to even have so much as a recruiting profile on one of the networks. You're also a five-star. You're also a Texas legacy. You've also had all these different, you know, that flash moment in the Alamo Bowl and other flash moments. Come on, you probably shouldn't be running with the third string. That's something that, you know, that needs to be a you thing. You, Alfred Collins, who is listening to this, like that you got to do something there to make sure of that. But as far as it being a freak out about PK or Sart or just anything about the defense in general, I'll go back to what I said on Inside Texas. It's day one. It's day one, and that's one drill that I had to look through a camera lens 110 yards just to see a little bit. It was accurate, but it wasn't easy to get. And who knows what else happened the rest of practice when they're working with Bo Davis, working with PK. So I'm not freaking out about that quite yet. You know, whenever we post depth charts and stuff like that on Inside Texas, the first question always, well, where's so-and-so? You know, people were freaking out about freshmen who have literally never practiced in a helmet at Texas, all being third string. Like, yeah, we know Kelvin Banks is probably going to move up. We know Devin Campbell's probably going to move up.
There's a hierarchy to this. You don't do it on day one.
Like, I remember there was a freak out about Calvin Anderson when he transferred from Rice. Like, oh, he's running with the third string. And then, like, 2 days later, he was starting at left tackle. Like, there's a process to this. And it seems silly. I bet the kids know it's silly. I bet the coaches know it's silly. But there's a process. You have to have this hierarchy. And now we just have to find and figure out if Alfred Collins is going to go and move up this hierarchy.
Hey, you were some distance away from the defense. Would you prefer to either bring like an old Mariners telescope that you unveil, like you unwind to look, or what about a pair of opera glasses? Have you ever seen
just opera like glasses?
Little stick.
Yeah.
And it's like you're in Vienna.
Should I put a little stick on these to walk around?
And then it'll just be kind of a class move.
I'll get some duct tape. Yeah, a Mariner telescope. That'd draw some eyes. Right. These are essential for going to football games, football practices. So, it's just the way the it goes. If you're at the Denius Field, there's the west side. The west side is the bubble and 100-yard field and about a 50-yard practice area. And then there's like a 70-yard field and then I-35. So they keep us on this little area in between the bubble and the longer practice field. And the offense normally runs in towards the bubble and the defense is way on the other end. So it makes it tough. Now I can tell you pretty much everybody on that offensive depth chart at this point, just because it's there right in front of me. And that's always kind of fun to see, just seeing how Sarkisian works with the quarterbacks and even how AJ Milwee and Shard Choice work with their position groups. But defense is always a chore, and it was like that under previous coaches too, having to squint and look real deep and see if that's 96 or 98 down there.
Mm-hmm. Is there a world where Oviagofu and Baron Sorrell are both on the field in our best 11 on defense?
You know, if they run like the base look where it's 4 DBs instead of a 5 DB look, that may be it. But that doesn't put both of them on opposite edges, I feel like. I feel like Oviagofu is going to be on the field for most snaps this season. I think they really like him at that buck role. And if they make some alterations and go base, they like him at Sam at that third kind of field side linebacker role, helping hold the edge. The question of that hypothetical is Sorrell. And, I think I can look up his listed weight real quick, but I don't think it was much more than.
He's like 250, 255.
Yeah, 250. And, that's probably a pretty good weight for someone who drops back a lot, but for a team that had a lot of issues holding the edge, I don't know if that's the guy you want doing that, especially if it's in that 245. So, if I had to give an answer to your question, I think it's no, but I think I think Ovi is going to be a significant part of this defense all year in two different spots, very likely. And Sorrell's going to play a good amount, but considering what we know about the defensive line depth on the interior, like we just talked about, considering maybe some alterations they make, I don't think the best 11 includes both those guys. I think what we'll probably see is, remember, I mean, and a lot of people are probably going to like hearing this, Chris Ash had a four-man front, but only three guys had their hands in the dirt. And I think one of the ends was Moro Ojomo, and he was miscast there. And that's also because Taquan Graham was pretty darn good at three technique. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see something that looks at least akin to that this year. It's not going to be exactly right like that, but you know, that's what helped unleash Joseph Osai. I don't know if it's going to be the same thing for Ovia Gofu, very likely not. But I think, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it just like the pre-snap look kind of reminds of what the Longhorn defense looked like in 2020, which was a pretty competent unit.
Yeah, so answering my own question, I don't foresee a world in which that's part of our best 11, and that's part of the problem, right? Is our personnel and the best defense we could deploy is not what Pete Kwiatkowski wants to do.
Right.
It, like, that's not how, if he could assign his own talent to different positions, that's not how he'd deploy it, right? So it's a really interesting tension between what a coach wants to do and then also what the talent might be telling you, you might have to craft the defense to do, you know, differently. Ovia Gofu's interesting because if they really are settled on him as the primary edge, it tells me he's gotten stronger than in the offseason.
I think he has. I think that's something he even mentioned at Big 12 Media Days. I'm looking on the roster, and right now he's listed at 242. And I thought last year, and he corrected me, so maybe I was way off, but I thought last year he was listed way lighter than that.
No.
I guess not. But he seemed like he played lighter than that.
He played lighter. Yeah,
he did. And that's why Ray Thornton was, you know, he and Ray Thornton traded starting spots for most of that year. But he looks like he's way more, you know, fit for that role this year than he was last year. And I think also, you know, he's got another year of experience there. Like, yeah. Notre Dame, I guess that would have been, I don't know if that was Marcus Freeman's defense the year he was there or the couple of years he was there, maybe one or two. You know, I don't think that role exists, and that's kind of why he found the transfer portal. There wasn't a specific role, whereas this Buck position kind of seems like it's pretty well crafted for him. But you know, it's a make or break year of sorts for him. I don't think he's got any more eligibility left. So I think we're going to see a lot of him on the field this year. Not only just because I think he can be a decent player, but I think he's a little bit more vocal, a little bit more sure of himself and comfortable on this team as compared to last year.
You know, in the offseason, Joe, they brought in a consultant who explained to them that if you lift heavy weights on a barbell, that you'll get stronger.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I need to start taking the GMAT and go to med school because I didn't know about that.
No, look, that's new information. You can't expect anyone to be on the cutting edge. This is, I think it was just written up recently in JAMA and the British
Right.
American Journal. But yeah, apparently if you do compound lifts with heavy weights, you get physically stronger. So anyway, just you guys, listeners, that's one more, you know, it's one to grow on, right? File that away. If any of you are trying to get stronger, do that.
Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura, and it's 512-784-0505.